Curtain Radio. Well, it's very interesting. A world first conference has revealed that a key to happy and productive workplaces are possible. And joining us to talk about this now is Professor Sharon Parker, John Curtin Distinguished Professor and Director of the Centre for Transformative Work Design here at Curtin University. Good news. Thank you for joining us, Sharon.
Thank you very much, Jen. It's a pleasure.
Now, where was the conference held and who attended?
Yes, we had the conference at the Western Hotel here on Murray Street in Perth.
Oh, good.
And actually the conference sold out about 3 weeks before it closed. So we accepted 350 people.
Gosh.
And about half of those were academics and half were from industry and government. So we had a really fantastic balance, I guess, of different stakeholders.
Well, you have had, and that's terrific. It just indicates, does it not, that people are very concerned and really very willing to have a smart work design.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what it highlights is that there's a lot happening from a research perspective. So there's a lot of people who are really passionate about the topic, wanting to understand more. But also right now, because, you know, many organisations are experiencing high levels of burnout, challenges ahead with artificial intelligence and so on.
Yeah.
Work design is a pretty big topic.
Oh, I can appreciate that it would be. I mean, we're sort of in a sheltered area with what we do, but when you've got progression in technology and people that are in that particular field, it is moving so very, very fast. And people are going to have to think very quickly about how they're going to get a good compromise, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the observations, I guess, that we're seeing play out in research, and actually just yesterday I was in Melbourne at a big industry event and heard a lot of stories suggesting it's playing out in practice as well, and that is that a lot of technology is purchased, is commissioned in companies from a perspective of efficiency and cost savings.
Yeah.
But a lot of time it actually makes the quality of the work much worse and actually often doesn't deliver benefits for cost savings or efficiency because not enough attention is really given to the human, the people side of the technology.
Couldn't agree with you more. We are human after all. I mean, technology is certainly a very big part of our life and will be forever. But we are human underneath everything. And acknowledgement, I guess, and working with people in harmony and good management, all those things are necessary, even if you just sitting at a, when I say just, even if you're sitting at a computer all day, you still have to have a human connection, don't you?
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that some of the terrible incidences that we've seen, you know, in Australia, for example, RoboDebt would be a classic, you know, which was a scenario where automated technology was put into place in particular government departments, resulting in basically pursuing very vulnerable people for debt who were not actually owing any money.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was lots of levels to that particular challenge, political, et cetera. But one of the most important things is the technology was introduced in a way that the human workers were not able to change the outcomes of the technology. So normally when people in those jobs make decisions about who has debt and should it be pursued, they use their judgments, you know. But when things are automated, that judgment is taken away. So we've got to be really, really careful the more we move into this territory of allowing machines to make decisions, especially if there's no human in the loop,
yeah,
you know, that the machines are making the right decisions.
Have we learned from it, do you think?
No.
Not
from
what
I heard yesterday. Let's look in our own organisations. You know, the number of times we are exposed to technology that actually makes our jobs more bureaucratic, more difficult, more cumbersome. You know, I think all of us can share many examples. So, look, I don't think we've learnt at all. And I think part of that is because the people that are buying and wanting the technology, you know, are approaching it purely from this perspective of efficiency and standardisation and they're not looking at the bigger picture, and they're not looking at, right. like in the case of academics, for example, okay, if we implement this new travel, automated travel system, what's going to be the impact on the quality of the work of academics? You know, people are not asking those sorts of questions at this point in time, but hopefully that will change.
Well, we're going to have to catch up because, you know, the technology is very inviting, I suppose, to a lot of companies because there are a lot of promises there. And, you know, and you know, this is the whole thing. It's all about money. We're learning more and more about, you know, corporates that are taking advantage of all this. Look at all the banks that are closing down now. I mean, I can understand why they think that they should be doing it because they aren't going, people aren't going through the doors. But, you know, it's the human factor, isn't it?
And also, if you really cost out some of these, you know, situations, is it really that cost effective? I mean, that's $1.8 billion settlement with RoboDebt. You know, we had another big disaster that was really also a lot to do with the human worker being left out of the loop, and that was the Boeing 737 MAX crashes that happened. I don't know if you recall, a few years ago, there were two planes that crashed 6 months after each other.
Yeah.
And that actually was attributed to the fact that new technology was put into those planes. The pilots were not even aware of the technology. The company made a decision from a cost perspective that let's call this a minor change because then we don't have to train the pilots in this technology. But in fact, then, of course, pilots didn't know about it, were not able to override it when it actually broke down.
Mm.
That resulted in billions of dollars. Well, it resulted in the death of more than 350 people, but it also resulted in the grounding of Boeing flights for years.
Exactly.
Right. So I think sometimes the there are cost implications of these bad decisions, but unfortunately, you know, often the managers that made the decisions, they've moved on to some other organisation by that point. So people make short-sighted decisions, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, they are because they're tempted by technology and, of course, it's so attractive, like I said earlier. But sometimes these things that are implemented should never be. You're pointing that out very clearly. Just because you can, I'm trying to say, doesn't mean to say you need to do it, even in the smaller scale.
Mm. And, look, this is not to say that technology is inevitably bad. I mean, there are an amazing range of things that technology does brilliantly, but we've just got to think more about what are the real repercussions for the workers and also the people who benefit from that work in the end.
When you had your conference, you obviously had a lot of great key speakers and that sort of thing, looking at it very carefully like yourself. But what about the comments from employees? What are they actually saying? Did you find any of that out?
Yeah, I mean, most of the time when people do research on this topic of work design, and that's really, you know, what sort of tasks do you do on a daily basis? What sort of decisions can you make? You know, what's the level of demand or pressure that you experience? That's the real territory of work design. Good work design always involves asking the workers themselves about their work design. And then using that to try and create better quality work with the input of the workers themselves. So good work redesign involves not things being done to people, but people thinking about how they themselves can make their work better.
Yeah.
And I'll just give you an example, actually, that came up in the conference. Professor Maureen Dollard, who was one of our keynote speakers, her and her team released a big report. Actually, they launched it at the conference, looking at the work design and the experiences of academics. And they presented some pretty horrific statistics that were actually picked up by the Times Higher Education and other media outlets, basically showing, and I think academics... and by the way, professional staff, academics and professional staff in universities experiencing extremely high levels of burnout, evidence that the figures have got much, much worse since 2020. So in the last 3 or 4 years, things are deteriorating even more. So that's an example of asking the employees, in this case, the academics, the professional staff, what is their experience like? And so that study really highlights if we want to have a healthy and thriving higher education sector, we might want to have a good look at the sort of pressure that academics are under, you know, the sort of constant change, restructuring, cost-cutting that's going on and how it's impacting everyone's life.
The whole concept of technology is meant to make life and work easier for everybody and more cost-effective. Yes. And yet you're getting these comments from people to say it's putting more pressure on the employers or employees.
Well, it can be a bit of a double-edged sword, technology, can't it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, on the one hand, you know, it's brilliant that we can work from anywhere, anytime, with our laptops. But on the other hand, there's then sometimes an expectation that we work all the time, right?
That's right, yeah.
We take our laptops home and we work on weekends and so on. So even if the technology, you know, is designed to try and help us, sometimes, you know, it actually has the converse effect.
Well, when you talk, you know, the way these employees have stressed to them, to everybody concerned, they'll eventually burn out, won't they? You did mention that earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, another sort of some of the research that was presented is some other research that colleagues have been doing for myself, but also people from the University of Sydney and Monash University in the aged care sector. And, you know, as I'm sure you would agree, caring for people who are older and vulnerable is one of the most important jobs in our society, surely. And yet what we see in that sector are astonishing levels of burnout and emotional exhaustion, psychological distress. In fact, the whole reason we're doing the project is because the workers' compensation claims that are due to psychological injury, so due to things like depression or anxiety, are rapidly escalating, particularly in the health and social care sector, such as aged care. So really, really important in those sorts of sectors that we say, well, what can we do to try to make these jobs better quality, healthier for people, because they're such important jobs.
Oh, yeah.
We need the people to be doing them to want to do them, want to come into work.
Well, these topics came up, but what about any conclusion on them? Any ideas where you might go going forward with all of this?
Look, lots of the keynotes were about what can you actually do to change work. And look, sometimes it's a bit out of people's control, right? You know, if you think about, we talked about aged care, you know, there are some big, big challenges in aged care that make it very difficult. But our research and other people's research has shown that it's actually possible to create better quality work for people if you involve the workers in the discussions themselves. This concept of crafting was something that was talked a lot about at the conference. And this is this idea that we can all sculpt and mould our jobs a little bit. And so if we systematically train people about what is it that makes a good job, and then we encourage and allow them to sculpt and change their job to fit better with their own values and needs and preferences, then actually there can be improvement in their mental health and well-being. So quite a few of the presentations were about this idea of job. It's called job crafting.
Yeah. Well, they obviously want to be listened to. That's the bottom line, isn't it, as human beings?
Absolutely. People want to want to have that voice and not feel helpless and that they can act and that they can take some control. In fact, we did a little activity in the conference. It was a conference crafting activity. So we actually started the conference with a little activity for, you know, where people thought about what sort of experience do they want the conference to be like, and they set a goal. And then at the end of the conference, we reviewed whether people had met their goal. And that was just a little example of crafting to try and make your work better.
Well, from the outcome of the conference, you know, you obviously are all very aware of what direction it should go in, I suppose. How is this going to be implemented? Where are you going to take this information?
Yeah, so I guess it needs to influence a lot of different stakeholders, I guess. So one of the things we had at the conference was a breakfast that involved regulators, like health and safety regulators. It involved Chamber. In fact, it was led by the Chamber of Commerce, but other stakeholders as well, to say, you know, how can we do better work design? How can we train our leaders in organisations to be able to do this more effectively and so on? So there's, I guess there's not a single magic bullet or single group that can do this. It's really, we've got to think about, you know, we've got the regulation in place now in like this health and safety regulation that you cannot cause psychological harm to your workforce. And that means creating good quality work. So, but what, where people are often struggling is, well, how do we do that? What do we do? Even regulators are struggling to understand, what does that look like? How do we know if people have got good quality work and so on? So it's really a case now of moving forward and influencing lots of different stakeholders, you know, from the regulators to the CEOs, you know, to the health and safety inspectors and the whole lot.
Well, it's advantageous to everybody if we all work together on this. And you know, the workplace has changed so much over the years.
Yeah, and, you know, I think people, like you've indicated earlier, people think technology is going to be some magic solution. And there's a lot of talk that, you know, we're all going to have no work to do because technology is going to replace us. But in fact, that has certainly not been the case so far. In fact, people are working harder than ever.
Yeah.
So technology isn't the solution. The solution is really around good work design, good leadership, good management, putting sort of human concerns.
Well, you're going to be talking to the right people, Sharon. I think that's wonderful. And thank you for sharing all that with us today, and good luck.
Thank you so much for the conversation.
That's a pleasure. Thank you. That was Professor Sharon Parkin.